The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain podcast on ESPN Radio.
Which quarterback has the best chance of becoming a franchise quarterback with his current team? Drew Locke, Derek Carr, or Marcus Mariota? We preview the AFC West plus vote on the best superhero movie nominated for our homework over the weekend. That's coming up in this hour of the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests are at 888-729-3776. That's the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Plus, we'll continue the conversation, which we've been having over the last week or so, on the issues in this nation. To do so now, to continue that conversation, I'm happy to welcome in SportsCenter host L. Duncan. What's up, L?
Hey, Will. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, man. Hanging in there. Appreciate the opportunity for discourse with you.
I always enjoy talking to you, L. Don't know where to start. Such a broad-ranging, wide-open conversation. So let me start with this. What's on your mind?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've got this this mix of helplessness and sadness and frankly fear and a lot of anxieties, which is not uncommon for a lot of Black people. But it's also mixed with a lot of hopefulness, just because, not to bright side it too much, but it feels like for the first time in a long time, there are people who get it, and not just strangers, not just Fortune 500 companies releasing statements, none of that. More so the people in my lives who I grew up with, people who, you know, white friends who I've always counted as friends, but that I've never been able to talk to about the prejudices and race relations and things that have happened to me and the injustices that have happened to me. Because frankly, it always ends up being a defensive conversation and one that turns volatile and it ends up us just sort of walking away, right? You always hear that you don't talk about religion and politics when it comes to friends. But I'm hopeful because for the first time, I think people are recognizing that human rights is not a political issue. It doesn't fall along red or blue or independent lines. It's a human race issue. It's an equal rights issue. And I'm having people that I never thought would get there, friends that I always counted as sort of apathetic, that are reaching out to me and saying, like, I'm sorry, and I've done some introspecting, and I realize that simply hitting you with those idealistic ideas that, like, we were all raised in some utopia where I don't see color, and I, you know, discounted what was happening to you because I don't see people that way, and I don't judge people by their color. I judge people by the content of their character, and, like, I recognize how my thinking was problematic in that way. So that's made me feel really hopeful, Will, honestly, in many ways, that it feels like now it's starting to resonate with people.
L. Duncan here on the Will Cain Show. So I want to ask you as a point of clarification, if someone believes that they try to judge somebody by their content, their character, I don't think you said this, but I might have heard it. You think that is problematic, though?
No. I think what's problematic is when people discount the situations and issues that have happened and that have affected Black people by saying, I guess I just don't understand that racism still exists because I've never looked at people that way. I've never judged people. So it's hard for me to understand and to relate. And that's the point, is that, you know, my best friend in the world is a white woman. We've known each other since we were 13 years old. And she called me the other day and said, I guess I just assumed that because my experience was that, you know, we were raised together, we, our family, our families love each other, we had a diverse group of friends, we never had to experience any of those things together. I guess I just assumed that my experience was everyone's experience, that you just don't see color, that you just don't judge people that way. But what you do when you say things like that to Black people is you discount the fact that not everyone feels that way. So in a perfect world, everyone would judge simply by the content of their character, but it's not a perfect world that we live in. So when you, as a white person, approach a Black person with your personal experience, you are diminishing their experience because, in effect, you're making it about yourself and not about them.
I get what you just said 100%, L. I totally do. Let me see if I can tell you my thoughts and see how they mesh with yours.
Sure.
I think judging someone by the content of their character is an aspirational goal that should never be let go of. But what people have done is they deluded themselves into thinking that they have accomplished that, when the truth is nobody truly does accomplish that. And it doesn't always have to be, although it often is, this really ugly version, metastasized version of seeing the world through color, i.e. racism. In other words, the other thing you can do is acknowledge reality, which is acknowledge our differences, acknowledge our different experiences, and then do our best to get past them to see each other who we are as individuals. But I totally understand what you say is if people pretend, and I do think it's a pretense, L, if they pretend to have achieved this enlightened Buddhist nirvanic state of never seeing color or race, then they are denying your experience where you know that is not the world. How does that hit you?
That's exactly it. I mean, the point is that I know there's been a lot of discussion about white privilege, and I've had a lot of discussions with white colleagues and white friends over the last few days about what that looks like. And, you know, it is a privilege to be able to say things like, I don't see color, but that's not the point. We don't want you to not see color. We don't want preferential treatment. We don't want special treatment. We don't want your sympathy. We simply want white people's compassion and empathy and the understanding that they do not know what it's like to be a black person. Like I've tried to use this example a couple of times recently, and I'm like, you know, why, Will, do you go when you're sick to a doctor, right? Because, well, they are medical experts, because they're trained in internal medicine, because they know more about the body than you do. Well, black people are the forefront of experts at being black in America. So believe us when we tell you these are the experiences that they're having. This is the fear and the anxiety, and this is where it comes from. When your car breaks down, you take it to someone to fix it because you don't know how to fix it yourself. And if a man looks at you and says, Will, your brakes are shot, you don't then turn and look at him and go, well, how about your brakes? Talk about your brakes before you talk about mine. You say, okay, how do we fix this? And that's all I'm saying is that we are all so quick to trust experts and to trust people and to trust people's word because they are more informed in something than we are. But that isn't the case when it comes to race. And I don't understand. It's not up for debate. Like, if I'm telling you that I am fearful of raising a black son and having to have the conversation with him about when he potentially goes from cute to being a threat, just listen and just believe me and help me. Just simply ask, what can I do to help? That's all that I'm saying, is that we don't want anything extra from you all than just compassion, and we want you to validate our feelings. And the frustration that you're experiencing right now, Will, is that we still at some point have to convince people racism even exists, despite so many years of examples that it does. And so when we can't even get people to validate our feelings and to listen to us when we are the experts at being black, it just becomes incredibly frustrating. And frankly, people run out of patience.
Okay, I'm going to go long. I'm going to push the commercial break because I can already see it coming on the horizon with L. Duncan here of SportsCenter on The Will Cain Show. I want to say something first. L., you don't need this. I'm not saying it to pander to you. In doing these conversations, I think, with a lot of people over the years, and I guess I am somewhat notorious for having a lot of these conversations, what you just described is really honestly one of the most eloquent ways of ever explaining it. So I don't know. Maybe you don't need to hear that, but maybe some people listening do.
Thank you.
That doesn't mean. Now, I want to walk through this with you. So,
sure.
I think I get myself into trouble, but I think with clear eyes when I have these conversations, meaning I don't disagree with a single thing you said. I get a little frustrated myself because I believe everything you just said. And I feel like when having race conversations, I do acknowledge a lot of things you just said. Like, I agree and acknowledge your personal experience and know that it's real. But then when I move on to the next step, which usually is a conversation on specific instances, you know, when I was on First Take or on this show, and we say, did race play a role here? Did race play a role in this coach firing? Did race play a role in this particular, who knows, tweet or incident? They come up numerous times in sports, right? Then it is required to look at all the facts involved in that particular case. And to do so doesn't deny the personal experience that you just described. But I feel like I get caught in this loop of going back to that, well, you are denying that by questioning if it exists in this particular situation. When I have to analyze the facts in any given particular situation, it's not reversing course, you know, to go back to start to invalidate everyone else's personal experience.
Right. Right. I think what you're experiencing, Will, and I understand that, because I do think that there are some situations that are nuanced, you know, but the problem is that in situations that are not nuanced, far too often the message is shifted. What precipitated, you know, the anger or the whatnot is missed. And so what you're sort of experiencing is trauma, frankly. You know, you're experiencing generational trauma for a lot of Black people. Almost all of us, I mean, we're not that far removed from the civil rights movement. Like my parents marched in it. You know, my father integrated a school. My father had a brick thrown at him. My mother as a 4-year-old had an older white woman push her off of a water fountain because she couldn't read and didn't know, she was 4, that it said whites only. So you're talking about people who have, my own parents, who have experienced and lived these things and have had to be hopeful and have had to, you know, lean and rely on the fact that one day things will change, only for 37 years later, their daughter to be talking about the exact same things on television and on the radio. So I think what you're experiencing is this reflexive thing that says, we're so tired of you guys invalidating what we say that we're always going to err on the side of you're not listening to us, you know. And again, I know that there are situations where there is a little bit more nuance that's required, but then there are situations where it's not. And like, I don't understand how anyone can watch what happened to Ahmaud Arbery, what happened to Breonna Taylor, what happened to George Floyd, and somehow say, well, I would need to see the full video. Or, you know,
but I don't
what
think,
did he do
I don't think they are,
to,
L, do
to
you?
Put himself in that situation?
But on, I'm not familiar. I do know that Breonna Taylor is a Louisville incident. I don't know the facts around that one. But Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd, I do think, I don't know anybody that really questioned what they saw in those instances.
It's all over. It's all over Twitter.
But everything's all over Twitter, right? I mean,
That's fine, Will, but you see it all the time. You see it coming from government. You see it coming from our government leaders that are saying things like, well, I need to let the facts play out. The fact is that whether the man walked into a construction site or different, he was chased down and killed in the street. The fact is that I used to work in retail. I had people pass counterfeit $20 bills all the time. A lot of them didn't even know that they were doing it. And he was alleged to have done that. And that is a death sentence for a Black man. It's the potential to be a death sentence for a Black man. Breonna Taylor was asleep in her bed and they broke into her house and just started firing. So there is no nuance when it comes to these particular things. And I think that because people always make this a debate, or they always make it a, well, this is my opinion versus your opinion, when you do find yourself in more nuanced situations, it is reflexive for Black people to say, you are invalidating us and you're invalidating what we're saying. And that's, I don't want to speak for all Black people. We're not a monolith, but I imagine that what you're experiencing is a bit of trauma from the Black community.
L. Duncan, SportsCenter host, here on the Will Cain Show, and try to cover two more pieces of ground if I can without totally blowing out
Absolutely.
My clock today, which you know about.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to that. But L, do you agree with me? Like, I totally hear what you're saying, and certainly to have your story and your personal experience either denied or having to convince people this is real in my life and I've felt this stuff would put you on the defensive in any situation like that, right? Or as you said, reflexive or whatever it may be. But still, justice does mm-hmm. require us to take these situations one by one. Justice still does
right.
require us to be sober-minded in our approach to every single instance, right?
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. But I think what you have to understand is that, you know, the worst of it, and it's interesting because I'm actually at, you know, a friend's house right now, a white couple, and we're talking about some of these situations, and I'm like, the worst of it is having someone kill you in the street and it be on captured on cell phone for everyone to replay. But it's death by a thousand cuts. I mean, it's being taught from a very early age to learn to disarm yourself, because as a Black person, in particular in America, in many instances, in most instances, you are the minority. So it's always about how do you make white people feel more comfortable with you being in their space? Well, you do things like you make sure your hands are always visible when you walk into a store, or, you know, you make sure that you're being with an abundance of caution, you know, overly cautious when it comes to anything involving a police officer. You know, when you get pulled over for speeding, if you see those blue lights, the first thought on your mind might be, oh God, can I find my registration? But we've been taught, okay, this is what you do. Go through the checks in your head so that you can get out of this thing alive. And that's the problem, is that it's going to a Marshall's or a TJ Maxx in a nice part of town and undoubtedly having someone ask you for a price check because they assume that you work there, because why else would you be there?
Right.
Or going to Belize and staying at a really beautiful hotel with another group of, you know, well-to-do Black people, but having hotel security called on you because a white couple at the beach wanted to remind you it was a private beach only for the hotel guests, and they didn't assume that you could stay at the same place that they stayed at. And these are all things that have happened to me, to friends of mine, within the last year, let alone our entire lives. So you have to, again, understand that this comes from a place of knowing that on the smallest of levels, it is someone walking up to you and going, hi, excuse me, what are you? Or because you're tall, asking if you're an athlete. And on the worst of levels, it is dying in the street with a knee on your neck.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying, Elle. One last thing. Okay, and I hope this – I only got a couple of minutes, but you're somebody I want to talk to about this. And I don't think you and I have total agreement as we go down the path, but we do in most of the things that we've done so far. My concern and my thought, Elle, is always – look, the way you solve the real experiences that you've had in your life is at an individual level. I truly believe that, Elle. It's like, you know, going back to the thing you said about your friend and what they said, it's recognizing reality. It's not living as though you've achieved nirvana. It's recognizing reality, but not letting go of the aspiration. And it's mostly internal focused. It's who am I? How are my actions? What are my thoughts? What are my reflexes? And one of my concerns, Elle, is I do think in society, we're moving away from individualism instead of towards it. I do feel like we're using a lot of group identities, and I don't know that that is the way to solve all of the experiences you describe, which I know are real.
I'm sorry, you broke out just a little bit on me, Will. That last sentence,
no,
what did
idea
you say?
Where. What'd you say? I don't know when I did. And it was it was a big bite of the apple. I don't know. My bottom line is this, Elle. All these experiences that you've had in life that are real,
mm-hmm.
I'm concerned that the way you solve this is at the individual level, looking internally. For those friends that think they've achieved nirvana, to continue to look internally to realize they haven't, but that's still an aspirational goal. And I'm worried that we are increasingly ratcheting on or latching on to identity groups and not the individual, which is, I think, the solution.
Well, but I think that people are, at this point, people are looking for solutions because, again, we've come a long way as a country. But I've said this to my friend that's from Boston and runs the marathon every year. I mean, it's like making it to Heartbreak Hill. And you see the finish line, but you just keep running Heartbreak Hill, right, which is the hardest part of the Boston Marathon where so many people quit. And we haven't gone far enough. We haven't gone far enough. And so people are trying to find ways. People are trying to sort of brainstorm how we can achieve what we all hope this country can be for everyone, right? And I don't think that – I do agree with you in that it absolutely requires introspecting on your part. But I'm okay with the fact that if people have to be shamed into taking a hard look at themselves, if people have to, quote-unquote, feel like the fake woke warriors – are coming after them in order to stop and take a minute and understand that their point of view could be problematic, I'm okay with that. Because at the end of the day, whatever we are doing is currently not working. We need white people to get involved. Because if it was solely on the backs of Black people and people of color, don't you think that we would have fixed it by now? It's not possible. So we do need it. We do need each individual and the collective to say enough and to be a part of this. And yeah, it can be little things. People keep asking me, well, what am I supposed to do? Like, how do I start? And I want to, you know, they go from doing nothing to I want to do everything. And the point is that it starts with teaching your children not just to be not racist, but to be vocally anti-racist. And it starts with little things that you can do. If you have a white daughter, buying her Black dolls too, because that's what Black people do. We buy Black and white dolls. We've always had to. It's little things like that that you can do that will start to create change and start to have open dialogue. When you are with all of your white friends and every white person I know, maybe it's because I'm from the South, but every white person I know will admit they have been in situations where people have said bigoted, racist, problematic things. It requires you speaking up and making the barbecue uncomfortable and being called a snowflake or being called. That's what it takes. It requires uncomfortable conversations and open dialogue. And that's where it starts. And there are so many other things that you can do. And I think if people are truly passionate about it and want to get involved, there are certainly reasons.
Did I lose Elle? Do you guys still have me?
Should still be there.
I lost Elle. Well, it was a good Oh, you're here? You're there, Elle?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I lost you there for a second. I got to go, though. I am up against the commercial break. I really appreciate the conversation. I don't believe in groups. I don't believe in collective. I do believe in individuals, and I do believe that's where solutions are. I appreciate the individual relationship we've had, and this conversation right here is incredibly valuable as well. Thank you, Will.
Absolutely. Thanks, Will.
Okay, it's Elle Duncan, SportsCenter host. I got to get. I'm way up against the break. We got to vote on our best superhero movie and more coming up on The Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We vote on the best superhero movie coming up in just a moment here on The Will Cain Show. But first, your SportsCenter update. NFL teams must hold training camps this summer at their main practice facilities. The league has decided. Sources told ESPN Tuesday. There are 9 teams that still hold training camps at different sites, including the Dallas Cowboys and the Carolina Panthers. Instead, they will be going to their main practice facilities this offseason. As the NBA models a 22-team format for July 31st resumption in Orlando, the proposed timeline for teams as the last possible date for an NBA Finals Game 7 is October 12th, sources tell ESPN. The NBA's Board of Governors has a Thursday meeting set to vote on the finalized plan to restart the season, and the league is still working through those deep deals with the NBPA. SportsCenter is brought to you by GEICO. Although we're apart these days, we're sharing more. And GEICO's sharing more, too, with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for both current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit GEICO.com/giveback for info and eligibility. The best superhero movies drafted and done as homework over this past weekend. That's next on The Will Cain Show.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school, or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Guess who called back? Our boy P.I. was mad at me yesterday. Or I don't know if he was mad at me. He was disappointed in me. We'll hear from P.I. plus a couple other calls coming up in just a moment here on The Will Cain Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. But it's time to vote on the best superhero movie drafted and watched as homework over the weekend. With Pat off the show, the draft went like this. As a listener submission, Logan. Nuno, Spider-Man. Will, Deadpool. Bubba, Dark Knight, Mike A., Thor Ragnarok. Which one gets first? Oh, in the show, we voted on last place, and the listener submission of Logan narrowly beat out Nuno's Spider-Man for last place. Everyone agreed they were the bottom two movies. That leaves Deadpool, Thor Ragnarok, and The Dark Knight in contention, I would assume, for best superhero movie. Let's start with Nuno, Nemo, our supreme leader, on his vote for best superhero movie.
All right, so
again, this is a vote for the best, not specifically the one that I would enjoy if it's actually on and I'll sit there and watch it. I think there's a clear a third for me, which is Thor. It was all right, but like there was, as Mike said, there was a lot of inside jokes. I really enjoyed Deadpool, but it's one of those where, you know, and it is one of those I can, if it's on, I can watch it, like no matter where you're at. But overall, the best movie was The Dark Knight.
And had you seen it before, or was that the first time?
I have seen it, but it was a long, I just can't remember when, but you just see the brilliance of Heath Ledger in that movie.
I'm going to vote second. I also vote for The Dark Knight. I would vote Deadpool third, Thor Ragnarok second, and The Dark Knight first. Here's the bottom line. It's on a different level. And it's tense, and one of my sons didn't love that, because if you'll notice, it never lets you off of the tension. It's got that constant beat of music behind it. He's more of a Marvel guy with the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows and the comedy and the tension. It's constant tension. But for me, it's smart, man. It's on another level intellectually. Like, there are things in there that I want to go back and listen to. Yes, Heath Ledger was amazing, and yes, Christopher Nolan was amazing, but the writing, the stuff about, you know, some men just want to see the world burn, I mean, some of that's apropos to what we're seeing in the streets of America today, that you can't understand the motivations of guys like the Joker. You want to impose your rationality and logic and think he's a normal criminal and think he has something in it, and then you can figure out how to beat him. No, you have to play it on his terms. It's just ridiculously smart. And then I love the line that everybody knows, but he's not the hero we deserve, but he's the hero we need. And he's not the hero we need, but he's the hero we deserve, for Harvey Dent and Batman. It's just on another level, and honestly, it's not that close. We'll save Mike A for last, since he's our hero, superhero expert. Bubba, how do you vote?
So I am not a superhero expert. Going in, the only movie I had seen was The Dark Knight, and I think the only thing this weekend really summed up for me again is I do not enjoy superhero movies. Deadpool and Thor were okay. They were fine. I enjoyed them. But the only movie I had seen before was The Dark Knight, and that remains the only movie I would want to watch again. That was clearly the best movie. I have no interest in watching Thor again, no interest in watching Deadpool again, or any others. I would watch The Dark Knight again. It was the best and is a great movie.
I love the thing about Batman being willing to take it, that he doesn't need to be everybody's popular hero. He needs to do what's needed for the city. I just love it, man. That movie spoke to me, and I've seen it probably 3 or 4 times, but I don't know, maybe in today's climate it had even more resonance. I loved it so much. Mike, what's up?
So this came down to the best film versus the one I enjoyed the most. Obviously, The Dark Knight is one, but I'm going to vote for Thor Ragnarok. Because of the humor and the action and the soundtrack and the story. I just think it's an enjoyable experience from start to finish. The Dark Knight is amazing. Like you said, like everything you said is absolutely true, and it should win, and it's going to win. But as far as an enjoyable experience, Thor Ragnarok just changed the entire Marvel Universe to me.
You're right, Mike. And if you ask my kids, it's their favorite one. It's funny. It's fun. It's all of those things. That's why I voted second. But The Dark Knight's just on a different level. And I think you acknowledge that as well, Mike. Hey, I have a question for you guys, because I've seen The Dark Knight numerous times. I don't think I've seen Batman Begins or The Dark Knight Rises as many times. Is it as good as The Dark Knight, meaning, I know it doesn't have Heath Ledger, but as smart and deep and just quality filmmaking as The Dark Knight?
It's close with the third one. The first one was more of an origin story, so it had a little bit more, we have to get you from A to B, whereas the second two movies could sort of just, you're already there, let's just explore it. Whereas, after The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises was just, it was going to be hard to live up to it. And a lot of people had a problem with the ending, myself included.
Job well done by Bubba. Job well done, brought to you by Napa. Whether you stop by locally on Napa Auto Parts, Napa Auto Care, or visit Napa online, if you need to help with your ride, you need help with your ride, you can count on Napa Know How.
Scoreboard. Thrillers.
Is this updated, this scoreboard?
It doesn't have the win for Bubba in there.
Okay.
We're in trouble.
So here's the current standings. Mike, 3 wins. Will, 3 wins. Bubba, 3 wins.
Whoa, Nuno, look out.
Nuno, 1 win. But Bubba also has 3 worsts, and Mike has 3 worsts. So your net right now is Will plus 2, Bubba 0, Mike 0, Nuno plus 1, because he has not gotten last, shockingly, and Pat negative 3. So that's your current standings, and that means Bubba will be selecting our category next weekend. And I guess Pat will be drafting first if he's back in the
fall. No, we punished him.
Last,
we moved him last.
Oh, you punished him for not playing this past weekend?
Yep.
Oh.
Correct.
Okay.
We're doing second round of psychological throwers, right?
It's a dictatorship. You won, you call it. Let's check in with our buddy P.I. after yesterday. If we can get to the AFC West, we're going to do that as well, coming up on The Will Cain Show.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We've had some open, rough, real conversations throughout this week and last here on The Will Cain Show, and we'll continue throughout our coming days. If you haven't checked out any of our long-form interviews that include those types of conversations, like our one with Damian Woody, Lewis Riddick, or Tom Herman, go check them all out. The interviews are on demand. The Will Cain Podcast brought to you by Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases. What's in your wallet? You're not on social media, PI, but the truth is you've become somewhat of a character on The Will Cain Show. Not a character in a negative way, a character as in a recognizable figure. Yesterday, after our conversation where you told me that I was really the problem or part of the problem, I got a lot of messages on Twitter. Some disagreed with you, some agreed with you. And here you are. You're back today, man.
Of course I came back. I came back to talk to my buddy.
I'm glad you did. What's up?
Exactly, man. I just wanted to hit you up, man. I really wanted to say I appreciate you, honestly. A lot of people don't say stuff like that for being someone with not as much of a difference of opinion as some may think, but just opened up the conversation to all the opinions. You know, you open up your airways to everybody, let everybody speak their mind, difference of opinions, talk bashing you sometimes, cursing you out like I almost did yesterday. But yeah, you're always good with it. So I just wanted to say I appreciate that. You know what I mean? And like I would do if we were in person, I would tap glasses and take a shot. So I'm going to do that right now. Some Hennessy. So I appreciate you, my dude.
Leave the man hanging, Will.
I don't have a drink in front of me.
I figured you would.
I'll tell you what. After the show, I'm going to tap one for you. I would say two things. I appreciate that, P.I. Number one, that's what this show's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be me living in a glass house or surrounded by people always telling me I'm right. That kind of show doesn't truthfully interest me. But then you as an individual, P.I., we actually talked about you before the show. Me, Bubba, Nuno, Mike A. And look, you and I have arrived at a place of personal and mutual respect. And when it gets to that place, I'm even personally okay with you telling me the things you told me yesterday. Meaning, like, I can take it. You know what I mean? Like, and then we'll move
on. That's what I appreciate you. I mean, like I said, I thought about it, but I figured you would. I hope you would. So I was impressed and not surprised that you were able to take it because, I mean, you know, everything's coming pure. You know what I'm saying? I'm being real. You being real. That's all we can ask each other, right?
Yeah. We'll keep having good conversations, man. I appreciate you. Thank you, P.I. All right.
Hold on a second. Did you just drop I can take it? Was that in reference to something?
You know I'm the Dark Knight. I might not be the hero that you need. I forget which one it is. Which one is Batman? As much as I love that line, I'm always a little confused by it too. That's why I have to sit there and think about it. So Batman's going to take it and be the bad guy, right? Which makes him the hero we deserve, but not the hero we need, right?
No.
Help me, Mike.
I think he's the hero we need, but not the one we deserve.
I don't think so. He's the one we deserve. Wait.
He's what
yeah,
they need.
Yeah, because Harvey Dent becomes the hero. So what he's saying is, Batman's the hero we deserve, but this is not the one we need right now. We need Harvey Dent to be the hero, because that restores faith in the system. You see what I'm saying?
And what is Will Kane?
I'm the hero, period. Like every, you know what I am, Mike? I'm like every other white person posting a black box on Twitter right now. I am the hero. Haven't you seen my social media post? It's ridiculous. But I am the Dark Knight. Anthony, in New York, you're on the Will Kane Show.
How are you, Will? Pleasure to have, thank you for having me. First time ever call.
You bet, man.
I'm with somewhat of an enigma. Biracial, born and raised in Brooklyn, still live in New York City. Retired New York City police officer. Let me just voice first and foremost, I am not one of those people on Twitter trying to make a case for anything other than that person being a rogue cop that should have never been on the force. And he will do plenty of time just to make that the shortest version possible for people to understand that. But to answer your question, as far as what are cops, the good cops per se, doing about these rogues, many things have been put into place, CCRB, Civilian Complaint Review Boards, internal affairs, but you have to understand the culture. This is not a normal job, let's say, not being derogatory to anyone that works, let's say, in an insurance company. You turn in somebody in an office for taking paper clips, the ramifications really aren't that serious. When you do turn in an officer, there is a time period. He just doesn't get taken off the force right away. So during that investigation, who's going to protect that police officer? Because you have to understand, you're dealing with each other's lives, and that can get very, very hairy and tricky. Okay,
I'm a little confused. You're saying because you're talking about Derek Chauvin had 18 complaints filed against
yes.
him, right? So you're talking about the process of a complaint being filed against an officer and the officer being taken off the streets.
Yes, it's a very, very intricate process, and a lot of police officers may be apprehensive because they don't want any fallback of being chastised in that precinct, and then their lives could be in danger. I mean, you may be too young to remember the movie Serpico. That can happen to a very honest cop. Now, as far as there are over 800,000 police officers, give or take, throughout the United States, sadly, and I think any incident like this should never occur, but sadly, it does occur. And the statistics have to be lowered, obviously. We hope to eradicate it totally. Mm-hmm. My last point, jumping a segue here, I hear so many activists saying how a business or a building or things can be replaced and a life can't. All right, I agree. But when it's a hard-earned business and those same activists are commending J.R. Smith for taking street justice to stop someone from breaking a mirror on a truck, don't you think that could be replaced a lot easier than a hard-earned business that people have put in 25, 30, and 40 years into their lives?
That's a good point. That's a real inconsistency. And by the way, Anthony, it doesn't have to be an either-or. It shouldn't be an either-or. We can do two things at the same time and saying we should be protecting individual lives to the fullest extent possible and protecting people's livelihoods. It's not an either-or. The protest doesn't require destruction and rioting and looting. I appreciate the call, Anthony. Appreciate you sticking on hold and sharing that with us. I hope tonight is a better night. It needs to be. We have to make some step forwards. It has to start on the street and then grow in society. And always, always, the foundation is at the individual level. I think if there's one thing to remember today, though, it probably is that I'm the Dark Knight. I mean, I'm not saying it, but Mike said it. But technically, Mike is the one that said it, so some people are saying.
Did I?
Thank you for listening to the Will Kane Podcast. You can listen to the Will Kane Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Kane Podcast.